pulled out of yourself. Once I became a teacher, I read a book called Reading Don't Fix No Chevys. It's by Jeffrey Wilhelm. It's about why reading is tough for some kids, the ones who want to fix Chevys in particular. Boys, the ones who have so much trouble reading nowadays. It's said that for strong readers, the story just draws them in without them realizing it. They forget their problems, they effortlessly imagine the story unfolding, and they essentially lose themselves in the activity of reading. Like a feather getting swept up in a stiff wind and flying away, or a leaf getting caught in a strong current in a stream and racing down the river. This is sometimes called flow. You can experience it in any activity that pulls you out of yourself. Even exercise and work or social interaction. Things you don't have to think about doing much and which in fact stop you from thinking too much, if that's what you've been doing. They pull you in. They let you rest from the ruts your thoughts and feelings tend to spin their tires in. They take you somewhere else for a while. Thing is, this flow experience of opening up and relaxing is mainly connected with any number of things we weren't supposed to be doing growing up in the meeting. Dancing, music, sex, partying, concerts, stuff like that. Most people have something that draws them out of themselves. Brethren kids, for whom this was sports, perhaps had it a bit easier than I did. Of course, it must have stung for them not to be allowed to watch hockey, the Olympics, baseball, and football on TV. And I know they wanted to go see NHL games and so on, but at least they could play sports, which they loved. For me, it was stories. The TV was removed from the house when I was 5, and the books I read were looked at fairly closely. Stories took me places. For example, without ever having seen an episode, I was incredibly into Doctor Who, based on reading the thin little novelizations they made of each story arc. Many Doctor Who stories have alien monsters in them, and one story arc took place on a planet called Peladon, which had a monster in the dungeons that attacked people. The synopsis on the back of the book started out with the words, "The Beast Roared," and my father decided that if this book had the Beast of the Apocalypse from the Book of Revelation in the Bible in it, that this was irreverent. He asked me to stop reading Doctor Who books. This was a bitter pill to swallow, especially as I knew very well that the book had nothing to do with Revelation. It reminded me of when he broke our Smurfs tape because of the song Smurfing Beer.
Beer, beer, Smurfing beer, you won't get drunk and it isn't beer. Beer, beer, Smurfing beer, you won't get drunk and it isn't beer.
See, I knew that the lyrics said, "You won't get drunk and it isn't beer." So it was about a clearly non-alcoholic drink. It was still, my dad felt, a bad testimony to listen to songs about beer. So I often read, with my books held, so the cover was covered, to keep from having it taken from me. And I listened to music, with headphones only. Ruth, born into the same group from which I sprang and was ejected from, was another one who loved reading more than anything else and had trouble getting in her own science fiction reading.
That activity for me is, and always has been, reading. Getting swept away into another world, whether that world were a starship, Middle Earth, Narnia, or England of long ago. Losing myself in the lives and loves and struggles of the characters. Loving and hating them, knowing them better than I knew real-life people. Living a double life through books. This was never, never encouraged within my birth culture. Reading to improve your mind and your faith, reading that was encouraging and edifying and profitable, was highly encouraged. If you were an intellectual Berean, you would be reading Darby and Callie and MacIntosh. If you were in quest of good written ministry, but not quite intellectually advanced enough for the Founding Fathers' writings, you had endless choices of BTP publications of Bruce Anstey's written exposition on every possible scriptural topic. If you were a teen contemplating entering the world of courtships, you would be reading Passion and Purity and I Kiss Dating Goodbye. And if you just wanted a brethren-approved fictional work, you could choose between Voice Across Time and In Search of a Song, both of which were set in the meeting. But reading that made you forget everything, that transported you to another time and place that was enjoyable, that was dangerous, could cause you to take your eyes off the Lord, maybe even stumble. What's worse, your reading choices could be a stumbling block to a brother or sister. I had to read Star Trek on the sly, hiding my books under sofa cushions and disguising them with construction paper covers, and I didn't discover the worlds of Narnia and Middle-earth until I was an adult because these books were forbidden.
I still have my Christian books from childhood, The Sugar Creek Gang, Alexi and the Mountain Treasure, and the Jungle Doctor series, Sunshine Country, stuff like that. I like them okay, but I also needed robots and pirates and cowboys and monsters and muscle men with swords and capes and things on occasion to really pull me out of myself and my gray life into other worlds where things are more exciting and less stifling. Colorful stuff. And Christian books didn't have robots or monsters or private eyes. They didn't usually even have guns or swords in them. If there were any, they weren't usually in the hands of the heroes. Flow is connected with the idea of passion. I don't mean romantic passion so much as getting really into something with your whole heart. Now, our parents claimed they wanted us to get into Thursday night Bible reading instead of watching the playoffs, reading comics, playing Nintendo, watching the A-Team, or going to a really good movie or concert like our friends at school. I don't know if my parents really wanted this as much as they claimed or not, or what they would have done if we'd expressed anything like hockey playoff enthusiasm for church attendance. I do know that they felt worried and protective of us if anything but the things of the Lord were giving us this experience of forgetting ourselves. They felt like we were cheating on God if that happened, inviting divine retribution and judgment, the withholding of blessing at the very least. Really, I think they were quite content so long as we simply showed up and sat sedately at meeting. It was okay, even if you'd mentally checked out, so long as you looked dutiful and meek. It was all okay, so long as we showed no more passion and fanatic devotion to anything else either. As long as we stayed out of trouble, didn't stray, didn't party, didn't entertain ourselves, didn't give the appearance of being someone who didn't get the reputation of being someone who might. I think this made many of us fear really getting into anything, and that some of us still have real trouble doing that. Dancing, for example. Laughing at live comedy. Or standing up and singing and cheering at a concert. When we do, we're kind of looking over our shoulders to see if it's okay. We feel terribly self-conscious. I think also that we feel a bit awkward that church stuff doesn't always hold quite the same thoughtless, stress-relieving fun for us that these other things do. We must be lesser Christians to be so easily pulled in by these lesser things, these unedifying things of this world. Going for that flow. People in charismatic churches, of course, were doing the very opposite of what we were doing at mine. Rather than quiet, reverent contemplation, they were overtly going for that flow experience as much as possible. An outpouring rather than an interning. Noisy projection rather than quiet reflection. Some of them prayerfully sought experiences like uncontrollably laughing, barking, sneezing, crying, fainting, or falling down in the spirit, often as evidence of salvation. Reverence, silence, and doctrinal correctness aren't really the thing there. In fact, what churches of this kind are often looking to provide is what anthropologists call an orgiastic experience. The word has nothing to do with orgy nor orgasm, but simply means that you get caught up in a cathartic emotional experience. They're looking to experience an outpouring of emotion, and will use stage lights, keyboard music, dancing, and slideshows with pictures of sunsets, mountains, and the ocean as catalysts if necessary. They'll use them to make prayers to God sound better. Whatever works is fair game. In many of these cases, the emotional outpouring is not simply evidence of something deeper going on, nor is it seen as merely a side benefit or a reward or anything, but it is the very point itself. The spirituality of the people involved and their connection to God are being measured by how deeply they get into the emotional experience. The catharsis becomes the focus, the outpouring of emotion, the point. In fact, I think it can actually get to the point where the outpouring of emotion is in and of itself both what is being served and what is actually being worshipped. For people recovering from drug or alcohol addiction, I think the attempt can be made to get high on Jesus instead. But what I think really doesn't matter. Naturally, people in my church would judge this kind of charismatic thing quite harshly and say that instead of correct thoughts about God being the point, an emotional experience had become the point. I would once have been right there with them saying the same thing, but I eventually discovered that we somber folk too often have our own dubious, not really about God reasons for doing our religious stuff our way too. Some people grew up worshiping God brethren style, but were simply served far less well by it than I. Some seemed to be more extroverted, emotional, and charismatic people. Some were loud people, or people who didn't like to be still. Many of these were the very first ones who left and went to more charismatic, performance-based modern services and loved all that stuff. But not me. I was brethren, through and through. I was in it for the long haul.